I don't know if everybody is aware of this because Crown Jewel just went off the air, but the Wednesday night ratings are in for last night, and as expected, the World Series absolutely devastated both AEW and NXT for the evening. AEW down to 759,000. NXT down to 580,000. And Game 7 of the World Series, 23 million. That's quite the jump. That is quite the leap between wrestling and baseball last night. So you can pretty much, look, it's still a bad trend, both shows going down, but 23 million people over on Fox, I think they've got a pretty good excuse. This is your WWE Crown Jewel 2019 review, Sweet Saudi Money 4. Give me more. More money from Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. And I got to give props to the WWE crew who flew out to this show here and are immediately going to head, I guess, on the red eye back to the U.S. because they've got SmackDown Live tomorrow night. So they worked the shows this week and probably straight from, the Raw guys, probably straight from Raw, flew to Riyadh. And now that this show is over, they're all rushing back to the U.S. because SmackDown is in Buffalo, New York. So that sucks. That sucks. But you guys can vote in the poll, as I just said, at Solomonster on Twitter. Let your voices be heard. Thumbs up, thumbs down. What did you think of tonight's show? Also, hit that sub button. If you are not already subscribed, you will get a shout out on screen. And I appreciate everybody who subscribes here to the channel. Same with Super Chats. You will very likely, if everything is in working order here, be seeing your Super Chats flash on the screen throughout the evening here. For those who wish to donate, I thank you all in advance. And so you can do that. I already see we've got Dave GB77, thank you for the sub, and Andrew Lolivar, $4.99 Super Chat. $5 says The Fiend gives up the title on SmackDown and we get some type of tournament for the new champion on Raw. I've got a different take on that. I'm going to talk about The Fiend a little bit later on when I get to the main event and what I think this is all about. It seems pretty obvious to me. And I don't think that they're going to vacate the championship. So I'll save that for later. And we'll take your phone calls as well. Going to be fun. Hope everybody's having a happy Halloween here October 31st. Haven't had the chance yet to watch any Halloween movies, so I'm kind of irritated about that. We'll take care of that tonight. Let's just get right into this here. I thought that this show, it was a mixed bag. It was not an awful show, but it was not a great show. That's kind of the standard fare, I think, lately for WWE. It's hard to really, it's either really, really awful, like what we got with Hell in a Cell, or it's kind of a mixed bag. I thought there were some pretty damn good matches tonight. I thought that the Team Hogan versus Team Flair match was a lot of fun. I thought that the Cesaro Mansoor match, frankly, was the best match on the entire show. And the Tag Team Turmoil match also, the Tag Team Turmoil match had its moments. I can't really say that I loved it. The rest of the show was just kind of there. And the main event, up until the finish, they did the right thing. They tried to right the wrongs of what they did at Hell in a Cell. What they did tonight does not make up for that crap finish and what they did at Hell in a Cell. Let us never forget. But they did the right thing tonight. There was absolutely no outcome to this match that would have, been acceptable than what we got, although it does present now a problem as far as Raw and SmackDown are concerned. But I just thought this was a very middle-of-the-road show. If I had to give it a score 1 to 10, I probably would go, on this show, I'd probably go in the range of a 6, 6.5 maybe, if I'm being generous. I don't really know that I would go higher than that. Pre-show, kickoff, opened with a 20-man battle royal. We had, thank you, by the way, Walter Mercer, Paul Thompson, Alan Sarsfield. I love the bats flying around. Don't you love the Halloween theme? I'm almost sad that it's almost over. I've been waiting for this. I really could give a shit about this show. I love the Halloween theme. I couldn't wait to bust out the Halloween stuff here on the stream. So I got a smile on my face right now. 20-man battle royal on the kickoff show. Who would go on to face AJ Styles for the United States Championship later on in the show? And we had a bunch of, you know, mid-card guys. We had R-Truth. We had Apollo Crews. We had Buddy Murphy. You know, we had a bunch of just, you know, the Singh brothers. Harper and Rowan were in there. Humberto Carrillo, Cedric Alexander. Actually came down to Harper, Rowan, Carrillo, and Cedric were the final four in this match. Cedric tried to make a comeback. It was all for naught. He got dumped out. R-Truth ended up rolling up one of the Singh brothers. I forget which one was the 24-7 champion, and frankly, I cannot bring myself to care enough to check on which Singh brother had the championship, as if it even really matters. Anyway, he rolled one of them up and pinned him and got back his title. That brought out all of the goofs who had already been eliminated. They came running back out. They're chasing after the championship. Later in the show, Truth, he ran into a door, knocked himself out. One of the Singhs won the belt back. It isn't even funny anymore. Right? I don't even find it funny anymore. Who finds this entertaining? Show yourself. Reveal yourself. I would love to know who finds this at this point, after all these months of the same stuff, no creativity to it, who is actually entertained by this? Please. Please. So we had the opening of the show. They didn't waste any time. They opened the main card. WWE Championship match. Steve Winyard, by the way, thank you for the super chat. A little happy Bray won. He said extremely happy that Seth lost. Yes, I cannot wait to talk about that later on in the show. Why don't I hear anything? I can see the alerts on the screen, but I'm not hearing them. So if I miss you, I'll try to swing back and circle around if I miss some of you guys. Brock Lesnar defending the WWE Championship in the opening match, curtain jerking the show here, defending his title against Cain Velasquez. This was Cain Velasquez's debut match in WWE, the only man in history to make his in-ring debut in WWE, and in his very first match, he is challenging for the top championship in the company. Rey Mysterio came out next, arm still in a sling. Out came Velasquez. This match lasted about as long as it took for me to set the stream up before I went live here, and that probably took longer. They exchanged some strikes. There was a takedown attempt by Brock. This was very boring. I don't know who could possibly be excited by any of this. Kane started laying in some shots in on Lesnar, not very convincingly. And all of a sudden, Lesnar transitioned into the Kimura lock, and Cain Velasquez submitted. Cain Velasquez gave up in just over 2 minutes. I had this on my stopwatch at 2 minutes and 14 seconds. And Brock Lesnar is still your WWE champion. Kofi Kingston does not have to feel so bad anymore. He is not the only one to be beaten by Lesnar quickly. And Kane is a former UFC champion. So what the hell were they thinking here? Obviously, they were going for the MMA feel. They wanted this to feel like a fight. Kane is a fighter. Kane is not a wrestler. Not professionally. He is a fighter. And I honestly cannot say, when this was over, I cannot say that I was really upset by what they did here. Because, I mean, think about this. The longer this match went, the more it likely would have sucked. Can you really say the match sucked in 2 minutes? I don't think it had enough time to suck. It just was one of these blink and you missed it kind of things. I mean, Cain Velasquez has no business wrestling in long matches for the WWE Championship. He's had 2 matches, maybe 3, before this. I thought it was 2. Two six-mans in AAA. That's it. That is it. This was his very first singles match ever in professional wrestling. He has no business being in the ring for 10 minutes, 12 minutes, 15 minutes. This was not going to be a Matt Classic. Now, I can't say that this does Kane any favors, you know, for his tough guy aura. But, yeah, to be fair, I mean, this kind of thing does happen in MMA. Guys tap out early. Sometimes you get caught. It happens. Some guys get beat in the first round. Look, some guys get knocked out in the first 10 seconds. Some of the toughest fighters in the world have gone down. They've been knocked out in the first 10 seconds. Chris Ludek, thank you for the $10 super chat, my friend. He says, here's your renewal of the WWE Network for November on me. plus 1 cent. Well, thank you. I gotta say, I do kind of feel dumb sometimes. Everybody's getting their free months. I've been paying $9.99 since day one. I still say the network is a steal. No matter how bad the product may get, for all the stuff they give you on that network, for $9.99, if we're being honest, if we're being fair, that's still a hell of a deal. But thank you, Chris. I appreciate that. This was nothing special. This was really nothing special. Kane is signed for 3 years. He's not going anywhere. He's going to be around for a while. So it didn't, you know, kill him or anything. He'll be fine, I think. Maybe, hey, what was the idea that I was floating the other day? Because supposedly he wanted to come in with a mask on like he was doing in AAA and be some kind of Lucha Libre superhero. Maybe now he'll be so ashamed he can't show his face that he puts a mask on. Maybe he starts wearing a mask. It's possible. Yeah, see, somebody in the chat said Ben Askren, 5 seconds. There you go. Sometimes you just get caught. And that's what happened here to Kane. I was thankful they kept this as short as they did. Brock refused to let go of the Kimura. Rey Mysterio got inside. He started hitting Brock with a chair. Brock tossed him out of the ring. And then Lesnar got the chair. So he waylaid Kane with some chair shots, finished him off with an F5 on the chair. Rey comes back in. And Rey Mysterio absolutely beats the shit out of Brock Lesnar with this steel chair. Absolutely destroyed. He was relentless with this chair. He even hit him in the face. He hit Brock in the face with the chair. Brock clearly got his hands up, so that's good. No big deal. This was great. This was a great setup for Brock Lesnar against Rey Mysterio. The only problem is Rey is on the Raw roster. And we just had a draft where we were led to believe that WWE is super serious this time. Super serious. We really mean it this time, guys. Yeah, no, they really mean it this time. This is going to be a real brand split. Well, it took no more than a few weeks to make liars out of everybody who I heard peddling that talking point. Oh, Solomonster, you're such a negative ninny. The draft doesn't take effect until this Friday. This is what I heard from people on Twitter a few weeks ago. There was something that happened. Somebody had been drafted, and then they popped up on Raw, and I made a comment about it. And I can't tell you how many tweets I got. Oh, Solomonster, you need to pay attention. They said that clearly the draft does not officially take effect until this Friday. Oh, yeah? You fools? Where are you now? Where are you now? How could you not see that this would happen? So now we've got a Raw guy who is all primed to challenge for the SmackDown Championship. In fact, they ran an advertisement immediately after this for the WWE Network, promoting for the very first time Raw versus SmackDown versus NXT at Survivor Series, which is cool. I think that's cool that they would include NXT in that. They should. NXT is on USA now, just like Raw, just like SmackDown used to be. It is the third brand. It is no longer developmental. How many times has Triple H said that? It's not developmental. It's not developmental. Then why would NXT not be involved? But the timing of that draft was a joke because they knew they had Survivor Series. They had the Saudi show, and they knew they had Survivor Series coming up the very next month, and already we're getting a mixing of the rosters. And so I laugh at all the people who said otherwise. PW Insider, by the way, interesting little nugget here. Claims that there have been rumblings of doing a War Games match at Survivor Series. Now, we're already going to get a War Games at the NXT TakeOver show the night before, but this would be the first, if they do it, this would be the first War Games match ever on the main roster, if they were to go through with this. Years ago on the podcast is when I first pitched the idea. I said, why don't they bring back War Games? Why don't they bring back War Games and do it at Survivor Series? Forget the elimination matches. It's old hat. It means nothing at this point. The name fits, right? War Games, Survivor Series. It could be the new gimmick every year that draws, hopefully. And they just wouldn't do it until Triple H finally decided, hey, we're going to bring it back in NXT. So doing it at Survivor Series would be cool. I don't know how that would work. If they've already sold tickets to make that kind of decision this late in the game, you're going to have a second ring. That doesn't sound very practical to me, but apparently it's in the discussion. So, hey, let me know in the chat. What do you think? You want a War Games match at Survivor Series, or is it overkill? Because we may be getting, two of them? I haven't watched NXT yet. I have not watched NXT yet last night, so I don't know officially what the War Games announcements were. But it seems like we're going to get a men's and a women's. If we get one at Survivor Series, that's 3 War Games matches in 1 weekend. So what do you think? Is that too much? I think it might be overkill. Thank you to, I'm a little behind here on the Super Chats, but thank you to everybody who's donated. John, shout out John Falchetta, $2 Super Chat. I legit forgot about the show, he says, until your feed. You're not the only one. Let's see, who do we have here? Will Robb sent a $5 Super Chat. Thank you, my friend. Very much appreciate that. I apologize if I missed any other donations yet. I know we've had a bunch of people subscribe. KVNGJC, $4.99 Super Chat. Do you think that they should put Bray back on Raw or have a tournament? Again, I'm going to get into this later. I don't want to talk about it now. I'm going to get into that a little bit later. Largest tag team turmoil match ever to determine the best tag team in the world. No Lucha Bros in this, which makes this invalid. Bobby Roode, Dolph Ziggler out first to open things up against the Lucha House Party. We had Ziggler super kicking Metalik, Roode planting him with the glorious DDT. So Lucha House Party was out. We had Hawkins and Ryder out next. And you know, well, I mean, come on. Do you even need me to tell you what happened next? So they were dispatched. And then out came Otis and Tucker. Heavy Machinery out next. And I had I see one person mentioned the witch laugh, so hopefully the sounds are working for you guys in the feed when people do donate. I did lower the volume. I learned my lesson from last night because this is all new, trying things out, and it was a little louder than I wanted it to be. Maybe it's so low that's why I can't hear it. I lowered it so much I don't even hear it now. Heavy Machinery is out. I love Otis. Otis is a lot of fun. He's a fun guy. Give props to Tucker. I was watching him in the ring tonight. Tucker is every bit as good and slowly becoming almost as entertaining. Not quite, but he's getting there. So I love these two guys. And they were in there with Roode and Ziggler. And they were able to dispatch the former Raw Tag Team Champions with the compactor. That brought out the New Day. Kofi Kingston, former WWE Champion, taking the place of the injured Xavier Woods, teaming up with Big E. They had a fun back and forth, did these two teams. Midnight Hour takes care of Heavy Machinery. Out comes the B Team. And again, do you really need me to tell you what happened next? Why is the B Team in a turmoil match to determine the best tag team in the world? Somebody explain that to me. James Hollins, thank you, $4.99 Super Chat. Ricochet against Chad Gable in a wrestling gear change match. Oh, my God. Oh, I'll excuse Ricochet just because it was Halloween. But, yeah, I got some thoughts on that later, too. So, anyway, B-Team is gone. Revival are out next. We get the Revival. We got New Day. And they actually pin Kofi Kingston with the Shatter Machine. And actually, wait a minute, hold on. They didn't pin Kofi Kingston. That was after the cradle. Kofi cradled Dawson. That's what happened. Got my lines mixed up here. So Dawson got cradled. Yeah, they beat the Revival. And then they took it out on Kofi when it was over, hit the Shatter Machine. That brought out Anderson and Gallows. The Good Brothers were out. And the Good Brothers got rid of the New Day. And they did so by pinning the former WWE champion, Kofi Kingston. Which, maybe I shouldn't be surprised at this point. I made the comment on Sunday. Kofi has largely been very well protected. And so seeing him take these pins in these tag team matches now instead of Big E is surprising. Even in tag team matches, when he was the champion for months on SmackDown, they did a damn good job of protecting Kofi. Very, very few times was he beaten. Very few times was he pinned, and apparently those days are over now. Viking Raiders, they were the last team in. They were my pick to win the entire thing, were the Viking Raiders. And so I was very surprised to see Anderson and Gallows go over on the Viking Raiders who were unbeaten so far, I believe anyway, they were unbeaten coming into this match. They are the Raw Tag Team Champions. They lost to a tired Anderson and Gallows. Now, I know a lot of people are going to be upset about that. I also think it's a little ridiculous, but I look at it like this. It sets the Good Brothers up as next in line for a shot at the Raw Tag Team titles. And so if that is their plan, then that makes sense. And for everybody who was so upset about the treatment of Anderson and Gallows for so long, they got a win. I know it almost doesn't even matter at this point because they've been so thoroughly beaten down, but they got a win. We should be happy for these two. Now, if they don't move on to challenge for the tag team titles, then this was dumb. But it has to be. It has to be. If they're going to go around with that trophy, with that cup, calling themselves the best tag team in the world, how do they not go after the Raw Tag Team titles? Steady Sphere, thank you for the $6.49 super chat. Imagine Hulk Hogan trick or treating on the network. Keep up the great work, dude. Thank you, my friend. Darren Till P4P, number one, Brock Lesnar is a fat wanker. Holy shit. What a name. What did I even just say? $6.48 super chat, thank you. Any ideas on who should be the person to beat The Fiend? He just won the championship. I don't even want to think about beating The Fiend. I would not beat The Fiend for a very long time. TPA Cliff, thank you. $2 super chat. Nothing is topping the Jericho spooky pajamas. Yes, I did enjoy Jericho's jacket last night. Tibbs316, $10 super chat. Thank you very much. And Garrus Vakarian, $1.99. A Solomonster review presented, he says, in Spooky Vision. And Casey is Raw, $2 super chat, thank you very much. Just wanted to say hi, I did not watch the show yet. Well then, I apologize for spoiling it for you. We had Cesaro against Mansoor, Saudi Arabia's own Mansoor. I said coming into this, watch Mansoor. Watch this match, may end up being the show stealer, and guess what? I just watched the entire show, this was the best match on the entire show. Debate me if you want to. I thought the Team Hogan, Team Flair was fun. Also, I thought that was fun, but this was the best match on the entire show. Mansoor hit a springboard neck breaker off the apron into the ring. That was impressive. Cesaro got his foot on the bottom rope just in the nick of time. And Mansoor tried to follow that up with a top rope maneuver. Cesaro cut him off, hit a gut-wrench suplex. And I love the every time Cesaro propels someone into the air and hits the uppercut on the landing. It's always great when he has a smaller guy in the ring because they go higher. So he did that to Mansoor. And anyway, in the end here, we had Mansoor up on the top rope. And Cesaro is up there with him. And Cesaro, it looked as though he was going to gut-wrench Mansoor off the top rope. As he fell backwards, Mansoor somehow managed to counter this with a sunset flip powerbomb. Headed back up top, hit a moonsault for the win. The place went nuts. He was, I mean, obviously they were in Saudi Arabia, so Mansoor was over like Rover. I mean, you wouldn't believe it. And the people went crazy when he won. And I think not only was this the best match of this show, this is what now? This was, all right, so this was Sweet Saudi Money 4. So they've now done 4 of these Saudi Arabia shows. I could be forgetting something, but I would say this may be the best match that we have seen yet on any of these first 4 Saudi shows that they've done. 4 down and 16 more to go, right? Is that how many they got left? If they do 2 shows a year, they started the deal last year, and it's a 10-year deal. So by my math, we've got 16 more of these. But so far in these first 4, I think this may have been the best match of the bunch. Now, after the match, Mansoor got on the mic. Not only is he good in the ring, he's well-spoken. He can get on the mic and cut a pretty good promo. So he got on the microphone. He talked about how this was the most important match of his life. And just a great babyface promo. And I mean, it's nice that they do something with him on these shows because he's, you know, kind of the hometown guy. But at some point, if they're going to keep pushing him like this, he can't just be the guy they dust off for the Saudi shows and give him a win over established talent. They should start doing something with him on NXT. He's made, what, 2 appearances in the last year or two on NXT? I think we need to see more of this guy on TV. We got a backstage promo, Seth Rollins, with Byron Saxton, where he promised to end this feud tonight with The Fiend. And there were audible boos for Seth Rollins when he was introduced here for this promo. He got booed in Saudi Arabia. Now, of course, they cheered him when he came out because the fans are fickle. The only thing that Seth Rollins said on that podcast with Corey Graves that was accurate. The fans are fickle, I will admit. But as soon as his entrance was over, the boos were back. Wasn't as bad during the match, but here he was audibly booed. We had Braun Strowman against the Gypsy King, Tyson Fury. Tyson Fury came out to the Isley Brothers. He came out to the song It's Your Thing, which was the last time. I hear this song all the time in commercials. And I don't remember what the brands were. I don't know. But I know this is a very popular song used in commercials these days. So they probably paid a pretty penny for the rights to use that song. And I was thinking, you know, between the song and between the pyro that he got when he came out, all paid for by some of that sweet, sweet Saudi money. No doubt. No doubt. Braun Strowman looked completely confused by his entire entrance. They gave Fury basically the Apollo Creed treatment here from Rocky IV. Appropriate here on Sweet Saudi Money IV. Apollo Creed, of course, got killed immediately after in his fight with Ivan Drago. Nothing quite that excited. Actually, you know what? I take that back. I was going to say nothing quite on that level happened here. Something was killed. Braun Strowman's career. Tyson Fury is fine. The only murder that happened here, unlike Rocky, was poor Braun's career. This match, now, I have to say this, because there were some comments I saw from people saying, oh, you know, props to Tyson Fury, man. He didn't do too bad. Tyson Fury, hey, he was pretty good. Hey, he didn't embarrass himself. Oh, whoa, whoa, hey, hey, hey. The bar, I don't know if you've noticed that the bar, and I don't mean Sheamus and Cesaro, the bar keeps getting lower and lower and lower and lower. This match showed why I can appreciate WWE keeping Brock Lesnar and Cain Velasquez as short as they did. Any longer than 2 minutes and that match would have stunk out the joint. It did not go long enough to stink out the joint. This went 11 minutes. And that was about 9 minutes longer than it should have been. This match sucked. Tyson Fury is not a wrestler. He is not signed to a contract like Cain Velasquez is. He's not training full-time to become a professional wrestler. He is a boxer. He is a boxer who was bored between fights. He's a fan. He is a true fan. I'll give him that. He's a fan. But he wanted to play pro wrestler for a night. And I'm not going to grade this match on a curve because he's never done it before. It's his first time. You can't grade it the same way you could grade any other match. This match sucked. And Braun Strowman, who we knew was going to lose here. I mean, it was hardly a freaking surprise that Braun was going to eat the loss. We just didn't know how. Was it going to be a pin? Was it going to be a knockout? As it turned out, it was neither one of those things. So that was hardly a surprise. But this, to me, was the exclamation point. This was the exclamation point for the idea that Braun Strowman, he's done. He's done. And again, we've probably known this for a while now. He's done. I don't see how this guy could ever be taken seriously again. Every time he challenged for the championship, he fell short. Now he's fighting non-wrestlers. He's getting punched in the face and counted out. This guy is a joke. Braun missed the charge in the corner. He posted himself. He does it in every single match. That's his go-to spot. Remember when he was feuding with Roman Reigns? That's all he was doing every week. Every pay-per-view match, he was running into something. He'd run into a door. He'd run into the back of a garbage truck. He kept running into things. So he runs into the post in every single match. Braun tackled Fury outside the ring. He went for that running pounce where he kind of does a lap around the ring. And Tyson Fury got a boot up. He caught him with a boot coming in. Braun went for a power slam. Fury escaped. Did a drop toe hold into the ropes. Got a two count off a boot. So Braun tackles Fury in the corner. And then he does that giant punch to the chest, knocks him down. Tyson Fury then does the Michael Myers zombie sit-up that The Undertaker stole, which is appropriate here on Halloween. Does the Michael Myers sit-up. Braun took him right back down. Fury cut off Strowman with a boot. Braun came right back with the World's Strongest Slam. Strowman, eventually, he hits the running shoulder tackle outside. In fact, I think he hit two of them. He puts Tyson Fury back in the ring. As he is trying to climb back inside, Fury punches him in the face. Caught him with a, I believe it was a right hand to the jaw. And Braun falls to the floor. He sells it like he is knocked out. He tries to get up before the count of 10. Stumbles around, falls to the ground, and Braun Strowman gets counted out. And Tyson Fury wins the match by countout. Big countout win for Tyson Fury. And Braun was not going to let this lie. He was very upset. Eventually, he got back in the ring. He gave Fury a power slam. And then Tyson Fury, not long after he ate the power slam, he got back up. He no-sold Braun's finish. That was the kind of the cherry on the shit sundae that this was. With all of the talent that they have under contract, they have more talent under contract than at any other single time in the history of this company, between Raw, between SmackDown, between NXT, between faces in the PC that we still haven't even seen on TV. They are hoarding talent just so they can have them and nobody else can. I want this toy, even though I have no intention of playing with it. I just want that toy so you can't have it. That is the WWE mentality now in terms of all of the different talent that they are signing. And so at a time with all of this talent that they have, you know what I'd like to see? Which I don't think it's too much to ask for. You know what I'd like to see? I would like to see the men and the women in there who actually know what they're doing. And not people living out a dream like they're paying to go to fantasy camp. And maybe I'm being a little hard on the guy. Fury could have been a lot worse than he was. I mean, we've seen guys go in there and trip over their own feet. But I think the issue is that we had two of these celebrity fighters on one show, which I guess is what the Saudis paid for. They wanted a big attraction, and they got two big attractions in Cain Velasquez and Tyson Fury. But two on the same show is ridiculous. When they have more talent under contract now than at any other time in their history, and they have to sit back or sit in the back and watch this guy punch Braun Strowman in the face and win by countout, no sell his finish, cash his check for however many millions he's being paid, and then go home. Now, what does the talent get out of it? He's gone. He's got another fight, I think, in February. So now what? Now what happens to Braun? Does he mope around? Does he just... I know what's going to happen. He's going to show up on TV this week with a big fat smile on his face. Because that's what guys do in WWE. When you lose the championship, you lose a big match. It ain't no big thing. You show up on TV the next night and you smile. The talent gets nothing out of it. This just really pissed me off. Let's calm down with some super chats. We got a lot more yet to go. We've got a lot of people, almost 2,000 people right now listening to this. Thank you all if you are tuning in live. I apologize to all the people I've missed as this review has gone on here. I know we had Zangsu102, thank you for the $5 super chat. Talks about Ricochet here in his costume. We've got Sean Waters, $10 super chat. Here is an extra month for free to watch TLC in December. Funniest thing on the show is Hogan taking, I'm going to get to that. You stole my tweet from early, you thief. Bobby's World sent a $5 super chat. Did not watch the show, but Solid Monsters got us covered as always. Of course. Of course I do. Of course I do. When do I not? Andrew Lima, $2 super chat. WWE threw that bottle at, what did he say? Threw that bottle at Natty should be, whoever threw that bottle at Natty should be castrated. Yeah, I just caught that. I turned. And when I turned back, I saw what looked to be a bottle. I don't know what that was all about, but whoever did that is an asshole. Plain and simple. AJ Styles and Humberto Carrillo for the United States Championship. There was a nice corkscrew moonsault here in this match by Carrillo. Styles went for the Styles Clash after the first attempt had failed. Carrillo made it to the ropes, though. He tweaked his knee, and Styles, as soon as he saw that, he wisely targeted the leg. He put him in the calf crusher. Same move that AJ beat him with on Monday night. This time, Carrillo escaped. He went for a moonsault. AJ avoided it. Carrillo landed on his feet. Again, tweaked his knee. Styles hits the phenomenal forearm and gets the win. Pretty straightforward stuff. I thought this was another good showing for Carrillo. His third in 2 weeks. First against Rollins, then against AJ, and here against AJ again. But it was also his third straight singles loss. I mean, he won a battle royal earlier, but who cares? It's a battle royal full of goofs, the way they're booked. Who cares? He's had three singles matches. He's now lost all three. Unless his gimmick is the lovable loser, I don't see any more of these, and I fail to see how this is supposed to benefit this guy. Byron Saxton. Byron Saxton's in the back, and Byron Saxton introduces Hulk Hogan, the real American here in Saudi Arabia. Hulk Hogan says, "Let me tell you something, brother." And that could be taken literally, of course. He corrected himself. He said, wait a minute. I introduced you wrong. He says, you know what? Beautiful Byron. He called him Beautiful Byron. Well, it's better than the name he could have given him. He said Ric Flair has never beaten him, and tonight will not be any different, which is not even true, by the way, but that makes for a nice story if we just forget all their matches in WCW. Hogan said that his team was out doing wind sprints in the desert in preparation for this match and that he was making them drink glasses of sand when they were thirsty. Well, that just makes you an asshole now, doesn't it? You're no better than the guy who threw the bottle at Natty. Speaking of Natty, first ever women's match in Saudi Arabia, Natalia against Lacey Evans. They had tried on one of the earlier Saudi shows to have a women's match. The women were flown in. They thought it was a done deal. And then at the last minute, I guess the Saudi government or the sports authority, whoever runs this whole deal, they got cold feet and they said, no women allowed. And so they tried again this year. And this time, success. They were able to get the women on the show. Both women came out. They had smiles on their faces before the match even started. You could tell it meant a lot for them to be chosen to be out there for this. They were both wearing full gear, so they were dressed from chest to toe, basically. And they had t-shirts over their outfits. This was like the most... What's the word I'm looking for? This was like the most basic outfit we've seen Lacey Evans wear, because her whole gimmick is that she's full of class, and she's got the hat, and she's like a Southern Belle. And now she comes out wearing a friggin' t-shirt, which I thought was kind of funny. And I know I could not have been the only one watching this, holding my breath, hoping for their sake that there was no wardrobe malfunction. I mean, that would have been awfully hard considering how covered up they were, but you never know, right? I mean, you split your pants, get a hole in your ass. I don't think that would go over too well. So thankfully for them, that didn't happen. There was no international incident here. This was, as a match, paint by numbers. Very, very basic. It wasn't even about the match. It almost didn't even matter that they picked these two. Because think about it. We had these two feuding for weeks. And then one week, Natty comes out on Raw and she says, "I pick Lacey to be my tag team partner." So they've gone from feuding to being partners. And now here they are again back in the ring against each other. What does it really matter? Really, what does it really matter? Lacey hit a beautiful springboard moonsault for a near fall. So many beautiful moonsaults in this company. Lacey Evans, Humberto Carrillo, Chad Gable hits a great moonsault. Mansoor hit one earlier, even won the match with it. All these beautiful moonsaults, and yet Charlotte Flair insists on doing her shitty moonsault in all of her matches. She's got a corkscrew outside the ring. That looks pretty good. But her moonsault? That ain't good. And I still maintain that if you have other people in the company who can do the same move better than you can, it might be time to let it go. Let the move go. That's all I'm saying. Natty locked in the sharpshooter for the win. Both women cried. Well, I mean, Natty cries after every match. I think Natty, if I think if her Wi-Fi goes off on her phone, she cries. Both women, though, were crying. Lacey was hysterical crying. Clearly, this meant something to these two. It was nice to see that. The crowd was totally into the match. To all of them, this was a big deal. And so I thought that this made for a cool moment. And then on commentary, Michael Cole says, "If you push, and you push, and you push enough, the baby will come out." No, he said, "If you push and push and push enough, change is going to happen." They didn't cure cancer. They play fought for 5 minutes, okay? Let's not pat ourselves on the back too hard. You'll dislocate your shoulder, although I'm sure we're going to get video packages now, and they're going to show the media clips on what a big deal this was. But then they have to just play it up and play it up and make it out to be even bigger than it really is. Oh, look at us. We've instituted change. Why don't you send Vince McMahon around the world? Maybe he can bring world peace to every country. You could send him to Syria. You could send him to Turkey. Send him to Mexico. Hey, maybe he can stop the drug war down there. You got the cartels. I watch Narcos. I know what's going on down there. You got the Sinaloa cartel. You got the whole thing going on. Send Vince McMahon down there. He may have to brush up on his Spanish. Maybe he can bring peace to all of these war-torn countries. Give me a break. We're going to be taking phone calls here in just a little bit. So I'll throw that up on the screen right now. There you see it. For those of you who wish to call in. Hey, Walter. Walter Kobielak, thank you for the $1.99 super chat. I appreciate that. And everybody else who has subbed to the channel here this evening, thank you all. I appreciate the hell out of each and every one of you. And a shout out to the chat. We had Team Hogan. Team Brother Jack Dude, Roman Reigns, Rusev, Ricochet, Chad Gable, and Mustafa Ali against Team Flair, Randy Orton, Bobby Lashley, King Corbin, Shinsuke Nakamura, and Drew McIntyre. Hogan and Flair each got WrestleMania-esque entrances with pyro. This was like the biggest entrance that Flair has gotten since he walked out in Orlando for WrestleMania 24. Open-air stadium, lots of pyro. Hogan comes out with Jimmy Hart. They're like Siamese twins, these two. I even love it when Hogan got in that airport confrontation at the bar with that guy the other day, that jackass, that drunken moron who tried to pick a fight with Hogan. If you look in the background of the cell phone video, like way in the background off in the distance, there's Jimmy Hart. He's lurking in the background. It's like, what is he going to do? If this guy were to come to blows with Hogan, is Jimmy Hart going to like come from behind and bash the guy over the head with the megaphone? Jimmy Hart, I think, is even older than Hogan. What's he going to do? But there he was. There he was, off in the distance. Lana walked out with Lashley, wearing more clothing on her body than she's probably ever had on at any one time in her life. Ricochet walked out, dressed up in his Halloween costume. He was dressed up as all of the tweets were sure to point out to me, he was dressed up as All Might, who is an anime superhero. And all I could think, though, looking at this, I'm looking at what Ricochet is wearing, and I'm looking at what Chad Gable is out there wearing, and all I could think was, boy, it's nice to see Hulk Hogan take his kids out to go trick-or-treating. What a nice thing. I guess it would probably be their grandfather, not their father. Or maybe he'd be their brother. Anyway, then you've got Corbin. It's even worse because Corbin comes out, he's got the crown, he's got the cape. So I guess Flair took his illegitimate son out for candy as well. This was, I thought, the second best thing on the entire show behind the Cesaro-Mansoor match. Rusev, at one point, early on in the match, he tagged in. Lashley was in the ring. Rusev makes a beeline for Bobby Lashley, and inexplicably, the referee holds back Rusev. Even Michael Cole on commentary could not figure that one out. He goes, why is the referee holding him back? He was the legal man. So, of course, as the referee holds him back, what happens? Lashley tags out. So, Flair's team got some heat on Ali for a while. They beat him down. Finally, he tagged in Ricochet. Ricochet ran wild. Then he got beaten down. Tags in Roman Reigns. Tags in the big dog, as Michael Cole was sure to point out to us. Ricochet, at one point, he got turned inside out by this awesome Claymore kick by Drew McIntyre. McIntyre is great. If he doesn't have big things coming up for him in the next few months, then I don't even know what to say. I don't even know what to say to that. Rusev finally came face-to-face with Lashley. They had a big brawl there for a few seconds. Roman Reigns hit this giant dive out onto the pile of talent on the floor, wiped everybody out. He tried to finish off Randy Orton. Walked right into an RKO. I think he was going for a Superman punch. Orton snatched him out of midair, hit the RKO. I thought that was great. And then Roman Reigns kicked out of the RKO. That I did not like. Orton suggests, you know what, it might be time for me to go for the punt. Gable grabs his leg. He's distracting him. Ali is distracting him. Finally, the two of them, they hit stereo dives out to the floor. Reigns hits a spear on Randy Orton, pins Orton. Team Captain pins Team Captain and wins the match for Team Hogan. Hogan's like a prophet. Hogan is like a prophet. He says, Flair's not going to beat me. Of course we're going to beat Flair. Sure enough, Team Hogan beats Team Flair. I thought this was fun. I thought overall this was a fun match. It would have been hard for it not to be with the talent involved. So I enjoyed this for what it was. And then we had the main event. Falls Count Anywhere for the Universal Championship. Seth Rollins defending the title against The Fiend, Bray Wyatt. We were back in the red light district for this match. You know, it's hard enough to see, I would think, unless you're in the first five rows when it's all dark like that. Imagine being in a stadium of that size and having to watch this match in the dark with nothing but a red light. So for a lot of this match, the crowd was very quiet. I picked up on a few boring chants. Maybe they were chanting something else. There were a couple of points where I heard boring, like when Rollins was setting up the tables outside, taking his time, putting the furniture together. I thought I heard some boring chants. I'm sure the lighting had a lot to do with that. So the Fiend popped right back up after a stomp on the floor. He gave Rollins a uranage on the ring apron. Rollins sets two tables up outside, stacks them up, one on top of the other. Takes a chair to the Fiend. He grabs a sledgehammer from underneath the ring. It's like Hell in a Cell all over again. But the Fiend locks on the mandible claw. Rollins hits him in the gut with the sledgehammer, hits him in the head a few times with the sledgehammer. So they basically, they kill the sledgehammer. Triple H is probably thinking, what the fuck are you doing? That's my gimmick. You just killed it. Running senton we had at one point by Wyatt. He went from the Arabic announce table, went for a senton. Rollins moved. He was sprawled out across the American announce table, and Wyatt crashed through that table. So then, a couple minutes later, the Fiend jumps up on the ring apron. Seth Rollins is on the top rope. He's trying to get himself adjusted. He's going to go for a big move. I don't know what he's going to do. Fiend catches him up there, and he sends Rollins falling backwards off the top rope, and Rollins falls through the two tables that he had stacked up just a few moments earlier. That got a "This is awesome" chant. The Fiend then holds his hand up to his ear. He's listening to his hurt glove. He's got those hurt and heel gloves. So I assume it was the hurt glove that he held up to his ear. And he rips up the mat outside, exposing what I thought was concrete. It wasn't concrete, it was steel. Steel ramp or beams or whatever the hell it was underneath. So he rips up the mat, and he exposes that. Sister Abigail is foiled. Rollins grabs the steel steps, he rams them a few times into the Fiend's head, and then hits a stomp. Again, this was, I believe, the second one. Wyatt kicks out. So now, they're in the crowd, and there was, the best way I could describe it, it was some kind of, I don't know if it was like a ramp or a platform, something in the crowd, and he hit Sister Abigail to Rollins on this platform, and he got a two count out of that. So now they're brawling up the ramp, all the way up onto the stage, and Rollins hits a third stomp. Fiend pops right back up. We get a fourth stomp. We get a fifth stomp. We get a sixth stomp. We get a seventh stomp. I feel like there's a 12 Days of Christmas song in here somewhere. Hopefully somebody can put that together. And then finally we get an eighth stomp. Not enough. The Fiend gets back to his feet. Super kick, super kick, super kick. And finally on the last kick, he knocks the Fiend off the stage. They had a bunch of equipment boxes down below. I'm sure there was some little pit in the middle of all of it that had like a crash pad. See, he falls off down onto the crash pad below. They set a bunch of pyro off. Sparks are flying. This was like Foley at the Rumble in 99. That's actually exactly what this was. Flames are shooting out. I don't know why flames are shooting out. That was kind of weird. Like, the sparks, I feel like you could explain. The flames, that's a little bit different. Jacob Donnelly, thank you for the $10 super chat. It's bittersweet, he says, that Bray won, but it was the only thing they could do to make people happy. Don't know what they do now, though, since Bray is on SmackDown. Well, that brings us to the finish. So Bray has just taken a tumble off the stage. Now remember, this match cannot end under any circumstances, which is such a stupid thing to even say out loud, because technically that means that the match can't even end by pinfall. The match just goes on infinitely for all of eternity. I'm not convinced that Seth Rollins lost his championship. We were told the match can't end no matter what. I mean, wouldn't that include pinfall and submission? I think this match might still be in progress. So he goes down below, and as he's about, he's trying to, like, dig, I guess he's trying to find where the Fiend is. So he goes to remove one of the equipment boxes, and sparks fly again. And now he's like, oh, my eyes. He's like Terry Funk. He's been blinded. He can't see. And they had this great camera shot, and hats off to them for this, because I thought this was a great shot, and the crowd reacted perfectly to it. As Rollins is trying to, you know, he's trying to see out of his eyes, the camera peers up, and right behind Rollins, guess who rises up? The Fiend. I thought that was a great shot. The Fiend rises up, hits a Sister Abigail on the floor, and Bray Wyatt, the Fiend Bray Wyatt, a SmackDown star, wins the Universal Championship representing Monday Night Raw. And so with that, to go back to one of the super chats earlier, somebody wanted to know, where do I think this is all leading to? I'll tell you where I think this is leading to. It looks like what they're doing here, they're not going to vacate this. They're going to have The Fiend on Monday Night Raw as the champion, and Mr. Rogers Wyatt, Bray Wyatt, is going to be on SmackDown. He's going to be on both shows as two different characters. We already know Bray's going to be on Miz TV tomorrow night. That's got to be what they're doing here. Fiend on one show, Wyatt on the other. You know, is it goofy? Yes. Could it work? It could work. Maybe he'll go for the championship on both shows. Maybe Bray will wrestle as Bray on SmackDown, and at some point maybe he'll be WWE champion and The Fiend will be Universal Champion on Raw. That would be unique. I can't say we've ever had that before. As a match, I thought the match was boring until the finish. At the very, very end, when he did that rise up before the finish, I thought that was a cool shot. As a match, I thought this was boring. It just plodded along. There was no real excitement to it. So I didn't really think much of the match. But that finish is what Hell in a Cell should have been. 4 weeks too late. But that finish is what Hell in a Cell should have been. And so The Fiend now takes his place as the champion, and we'll see where they go with this. They had to know that they fucked up badly at Hell in a Cell. And I guess this was their way of making up for it. Because remember, this match was not originally supposed to take place on this show. I mean, they probably would not have had their rematch until Survivor Series. Originally, Seth Rollins was going to captain Team Hogan. And I don't believe that this was a situation like WrestleMania 8. They announced Hogan versus Flair, but they never had any plans of doing Hogan against Flair. It was all storyline. Until they switched it to Hogan versus Sid. Was that the idea here? We'll announce that Rollins is on Team Hogan, but he's really not? No, I think he probably was supposed to be in that match. And they realized, shit, we fucked up. We better fix this. And so they had to change the card around. That's what I think happened. I don't know what Roman Reigns would have done were he not in that match. I'm sure he would have been on the card. So anyway, The Fiend has the championship. I've not given up on him. I thought that he was booked to look very strong here on the show. If that's what people wanted to see, then he kicked out of 8 stomps. 8 stomps and how many super kicks? And he fell through a pit of fire? Nothing can beat The Fiend. The problem with that is when you throw that kind of punishment at somebody and he keeps getting up from it, even The Undertaker in 91, 92, 93, when that character was first really getting built up, The Undertaker was never abused the way that Bray Wyatt was abused in these two matches. You know, we saw guys beat The Undertaker down, slam a casket lid on his hand. Berserker tried to murder him with a giant sword. Yeah, we saw stuff like that. But we didn't see The Undertaker falling through a pit of fire and flames and sparks and getting hit in the head with sledgehammer 5 times in a row. So now what you've done, you've killed off the stomp, you've killed off the sledgehammer, and who could possibly beat this man? That's why somebody in their super chat before, so now that he's the champion, who do you see beating The Fiend? I can't imagine anybody on the roster who could beat The Fiend. What are you going to do? You're going to hit him with your car? Because that might be the only way you're going to beat this guy. Hit and run. If you can get him out to the parking lot, you can run him over and then put the car in reverse and back up over his body. How else do you beat this guy? Look at what he's kicked out of. That's the problem now that they have. He's unbeatable. But yeah, I mean, I was thinking about this before. The Undertaker was the last, like, real... Maybe not the last one, but they've had others, but like that real supernatural kind of gimmick. But they never did to The Undertaker what they've done in just these first two matches between Rollins and The Fiend. Where do you go from here? At what point? I mean, how much more can the guy take? I mean, unless you distract him and tie his ankles together, how are you going to pin this guy? How are you going to keep him down? You can vote right now. On Twitter, at Solomonster, what did you think of Crown Jewel? What did you think of sweet Saudi money? Let's take a look. Let's take a look at the poll results right now. Wow. Wow, that's a lot more divided than I thought it would be. We've already got almost 2,000 votes, 1,865 so far. 45% thumbs up, 55% thumbs down. So there's more thumbs down than thumbs up. But that is not a huge gap between those two. So that's interesting. I probably would give this show a slight thumbs up. I don't know that I would go thumbs down. And the reason there's no thumbs in the middle, I like people to just make a decision. I don't like this wishy-washy bullshit. Oh, yeah, I don't know. I'll just give it a thumbs in the middle. You know that if I gave a thumbs in the middle option every week in these polls, what do you think people would pick? Thumbs in the middle. I don't even have to put polls up anymore if that's the case. Everybody's always going to be able to find something they liked and something they didn't. The whole point is you're forced to make a decision. When the show is over, did you like the show or did you not like the show? The stuff that you liked, was it enough to, you know, excite you and entertain you enough to want to come back the following week and watch the show again? Then you give it a thumbs up. If not, you give it a thumbs down. I like forcing people to choose. So keep that in mind when you vote. But that's the poll right now. 45 up, 55 down. Let's go to the phones. Let's start taking some phone calls. We got a lot of people waiting in queue, including San Diego. Area code 619. You're on the air.
Hey, Solo Monster, how's it going?
It's going well. You've got Rey Mysterio's area code and your phone number.
Yeah, I actually train at a pro wrestling gym down here in San Diego. So
oh, wow.
Seen him a couple of times.
Wow, very cool.
But yeah, my question was, it's kind of a buzzkill with the whole red lighting for the Fiend matches. Do you see the WWE keeping that around, or do you think eventually, maybe in his next match, they might just go ahead and just drop the whole red lighting?
Yeah, they have to drop it at some point. They did that with Kane. Yeah, remember when Kane, and I don't mean Velasquez, but the real Kane, badass Kane. When Kane first debuted in 97, he had the red lighting probably his first two, maybe, pay-per-view appearances, and then they got rid of it. I think there were a lot of complaints about it. I think that this is a temporary gimmick. I just don't see how they can continue doing this for another 6 months. Imagine Bray going to WrestleMania in the main event. Are you going to have red lighting in the WrestleMania main event? Probably not. Yeah. And hey, don't think that it can't happen. Don't think that it can't happen, because now that The Fiend is the champion on Monday Night Raw, guess who else is on Monday Night Raw? Aleister Black. Now, I don't know what the fuck they've been doing with Aleister Black. He's like some emo guy sitting in a room somewhere. He's always pissed off. Fight me. Fight me. Fight me. That's all we hear from this guy every week. Fight me. He's trying to sleep at night. He wakes up in a cold sweat. Fight me. Jesus Christ, dude. What have they done to Aleister Black? This guy would come out in NXT at a cool entrance. He'd kick people's heads off their shoulders. He had that great feud with the Velveteen Dream. It was so awesome. An entire feud built around the idea that he just wanted Aleister to say his name. Just say my name. And then when he beat Velveteen Dream, he gained respect for him. He got on the mic. And he said his name. And that was the payoff to the whole angle. And it was perfect. It was such a great story. Look at what they've done with this guy. Ever since they split him and Ricochet up, they went their separate ways. Ricochet did his thing. Aleister's been sitting in a room somewhere, pissed off at the world. He had a feud with Cesaro, and then he's right back to sitting in the room every week. We went through this for weeks. Cesaro, he was the guy who knocked. Then he beats Cesaro. I thought, all right, who's going to be his next feud? Nope, right back to the room. Fight me. Fight me. It's like, jeez. What are you doing? What are you doing with this guy? He should be the one they build up to face the Fiend at some point. And I'm talking months down the road. It'd be way too early for it now. But I could see that being a WrestleMania match. I could see that being a big championship match on a show at some point. You know, these dueling dark characters. But not if they keep building him up this way. I mean, this is ridiculous. Fight me. That's all. I just want to say that for the rest of the stream. Fight me. Fight me. Jesus. Peekskill. Peekskill, New York. Area code 914. You're on the air. You got an echo in the background, yep. So mute that. Mute that first.
All right.
There we go. What's your question?
Hello?
Yep, I'm here. What's your question? Hello? Yep, goodbye. I got disconnected. You gotta be quick to the draw here, guys. Try calling back. Collinsville, Illinois. Area code 618. You're on the air.
Fight me.
Yeah, fight me. So exciting, but, right? Yeah, what an exciting way to build up a character. Fight me.
I'm 16, and I think I could book a better match. I can book WWE better than them. But sorry. But what do you think is going to happen with Bray Wyatt? I mean, he's on SmackDown, but he's the Universal Champion. Are they going to, like, trade him back to Raw now, or what's happening? I have no idea.
As far as Wyatt goes?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's what I just got done talking about. I think what they're going to probably try to do, they're going to try to have The Fiend representing Raw. You'll never see The Fiend on SmackDown. And on SmackDown, you'll have just regular Bray Wyatt. Maybe he'll even start wrestling as Bray Wyatt. Maybe he'll wrestle in his sweater shirt. I don't know. He's going to be on Miz TV tomorrow night. We'll find out. We'll have our answer pretty quick. But I think that's the idea behind what they're doing here. Texas, area code 469, you're on the air.
Hello, hi, Solomon Monster, big fan of you, man. So I was just calling because I was angry at the tag team turmoil match. They had both champions lose in the same exact match, and so I was just trying to wonder your thoughts on that.
As far as the tag team champions losing in the gauntlet, well, I said before, if the idea is to get Anderson and Gallows in line for a championship match, so if they're going to challenge the Viking Raiders, let's say, for the titles, then that's fine. You know, that's fine. That would be one way to kind of get them in contention. We beat you. You were undefeated. We handed you your first loss. We're the best in the world. We've got this cup that I'm sure is going to end up being destroyed on TV. That could work, but yeah, I mean, it's champs or chumps. I mean, how many times have we seen this before? You know, where your champions get beat.
Right.
I wouldn't put too much stock in it. It didn't really bother me that much, but I think the idea is to set Anderson and Gallows up as challengers because they've done nothing on TV to make you think that they're worthy of being in contention for the titles.
Yeah, and I can't see that point. And also, one last thing. I know how you mentioned that, you know, The Fiend is looking like unbeatable. But I think that that's actually great for his character because, you know, he's not like a human. He's like a demon type of character. So maybe they can, when they hand him his first loss, maybe they can do something like a secret type of thing that, like you mentioned, like Aleister Black can have. And like there's like a secret that can defeat him, if you know what I'm saying. Like,
well, what would that secret be?
I have no idea.
Revenge
but,
porn?
I mean, WWE, they're going to have to get creative with that.
Revenge porn, but, maybe? You threaten to release the photos and video of him with somebody other than JoJo? I'm just spitting ideas out here. What else can you do? I mean, seriously, what else can you do to beat this guy?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know, but I mean, I do like how they're making him look strong. I mean, that's a good thing.
Yeah. No, I agree.
The old Bray Wyatt.
No, I agree. It's about time, too, because God knows they did nothing with him for the longest time, and I don't want to see them drop the ball with this guy a second time. He may not have got a third chance. This is his second chance here. He's the champion now. Don't fuck this up, because I don't think there's going to be a third chance if they botch this. Let's go to area code 469. You're on the air.
Hey, Saul Monster, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing good. Yeah, so I didn't actually watch the pay-per-view due to me being at work, but I checked out the review and everything, and yeah, a little bit disappointed with how the Cain Velasquez and the Brock Lesnar match went. Obviously, I didn't expect Cain Velasquez to win, and I really didn't expect the match to go 10 minutes, but you know, I thought they just completely buried him, and just the fact how they didn't really play off of the UFC history kind of reminds me of a story Jim Cornette told one time when back in 1998 when he just first got off the creative team and they first brought in Dan Severn, and Ken Shamrock was, I believe, was already in the company at the time. And, you know, they could have did something big with that, but they didn't end up doing that. And this kind of reminded me of, like, you know, this. I felt like the build could have been better. You could have made a lot of money off of this, but yeah, it's WWE, so I mean, I guess.
yeah, I know. No, we're in the same boat here as far as how we feel about that. Let's go to New York. We have a Long Island caller here. Area code 516. You're on the air.
Hey, Solomon Monster, big fan. Love your show. I guess quick question. Since Bray Wyatt, when he was first drafted to SmackDown, they actually used the image of the Fiend. So my question is, do you think there's any chance of Brock going to Raw since he's going to be fighting Rey Mysterio?
Well, yeah. You know what? That's an interesting point. So if they have some kind of like blockbuster trade... And I'm going to let you go here, but some blockbuster trade that they announce where the Fiend goes to Raw, or rather the Fiend goes to SmackDown, and Brock goes to Raw. So the WWE Championship comes to Mondays, and the Universal title goes to Fridays, although they'd have to change the color because you'd have that ugly red belt on SmackDown, so they'd have to make it blue or something. Yeah, I guess so, because you brought up a great point that I had mentioned earlier in the review. There's another thing here that also has to be resolved, which is the fact that Brock Lesnar is clearly going to have a match, possibly for the championship, with Rey Mysterio. And Rey Mysterio is a Monday Night Raw guy. Now, could they trade Rey over to SmackDown? They could do that, and that would take care of that problem. And who they would move to Raw, I don't know. I think we should have some trades. If you want to make this thing feel realistic, there should be some trades here and there. Maybe there's a trade situation brewing. There could be a trade brewing. Instead of doing The Fiend on Raw, Bray Wyatt on SmackDown, those are two options. We'll see which one they go with. I hadn't really thought too much about that, but you raise a good point. Maybe they swap their champions. So Heyman, we know Heyman's the executive director of Raw, so he doesn't have to travel to SmackDown. Maybe they just move Brock over to Raw, since that's Heyman's show. Yeah, it's possible. It is possible that maybe they do that. Just want to give a quick... thank you to everybody who is listening live. Chris Ludek, $5 super chat. That was a good shoot style ending, though. I feel they could have done a few more minutes of grappling and reversals before Brock submitted him. Yeah, I mean, they could have, but I think the match went exactly as long as it should have. Kane has no business being in there having a long match. You know, would I have signed him to a big contract and in his first match had him give up in 2 minutes? No. It's very rare that we see like a top babyface in the company tap out or verbally submit. Maybe they pass out in a hold. But they clearly wanted to play this off like a fight. And that's what they were going for. And it didn't make for much of a match. I'll say that much. Amos, by the way, thank you for subbing to the channel. Appreciate that. Let's take a few more calls here on this Halloween afternoon. Hopefully, I have not heard any trick-or-treaters at my door, which is great. Usually the doorbell's ringing off the hook. And if the doorbell does ring, I have nothing to give. I have nothing. You know, I'm the guy. You would think I'm such a big Halloween fan. It's my favorite holiday. I'm the guy who, I'm usually working anyway, but if I'm home, I turn off all the lights in the apartment. I pretend I'm not home. If the doorbell rings, I don't answer it. I don't do that trick-or-treat shit anymore, unless I'm the one going out doing trick-or-treating, and shit, why not? That sounds like a great idea. Maybe I'll take my phone and I'll live stream. Maybe I'll Periscope me going around the neighborhood in my Orange Cassidy costume doing trick-or-treating. If the people will watch it, maybe I'll do that. But as far as me buying candy and having the jack-o'-lantern and running downstairs to answer the door, fuck that. Fuck that. One of the benefits of not having any kids. I don't have to run around and do trick-or-treating. If the candy's not for me, why do I care? Area code, and don't judge me either, because you know you feel the same way. Area code 717, save me. You're on the air. 717. Going once. Go. I hear my voice in the background. Oh, enjoy the show. Area code 401. You're on the air.
Solid Monster, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you on this Halloween?
I am flipping swell. First off, huge supporter. Been listening since 2011. You make my fucking Sunday, so thank you, dude.
Thank you.
My question to you is, how does WWE salvage Seth Rollins? Like, should he pull a Finn and go back to NXT? Maybe Triple H can turn it around for him?
Well, I mean, I think he's better off going heel, frankly. I think he loses his mind. He tried everything against The Fiend. It didn't work. The whole world is against him. He's a whiny little bitch in all of the interviews that he does, whether he's doing an interview with Sports Illustrated or if he's doing an interview on Corey Graves' new podcast. He's a whiny little bitch. That's how he comes off. Well, you don't get enough respect, man. I go out there every week. I tell him to burn it down, and they don't respect me. You got to show me some respect. If that doesn't sound like a heel, then I don't know what does. So maybe he's got like a slow...
I haven't heard...
Maybe he's got like a slow descent into madness. Maybe that could work.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, nobody has been saying that. He's been stealing Daniel Bryan's catchphrase, because I know Bryan's been calling everybody fickle since his heel turn. And like, what the hell is that about?
Yeah. Yeah. But I just think as a babyface, it's going to take a lot, I think, to get all these people that have just grown tired of Rollins in that role to accept him. Because there's nothing exciting about him in that role. There's nothing cool. There's nothing to get behind him about, especially when he's ragging on the fans. To me, he's a heel. That's got to be the role for him.
I would agree. I mean, arson is definitely not a babyface move.
Right.
He's been whining, you know, for the better part of 2 months now, saying that, you know, he can't get respect, and obviously we see right through that. And I personally love him. He's a first bout Hall of Famer, but like, he's in this weird transitional point. It's like The Rock at SummerSlam 2002. Where it's just like, we all see through you at this point, and he's got to make a change.
Yeah, well, we can agree on that. We can agree on that. There needs to be a change with him. But, you know, him coming out every week and burn it down. Burn down the WWE stock today. Down 15%. That's about the only thing that he's burned down recently. Although it's not all his fault. Let's go to area code 609. You are on the air.
Is that me?
That would be you.
Okay, cool. No, I was making sure. All right. So I totally forgot there was even a fucking pay-per-view today. And the only reason I know is because I had to work. And a buddy of mine texted me and was like, yo, they made Kane tap in his debut. And I was like, oh. I'm like, you're going to tell me about that, but you're not going to tell me about The Fiend getting the title? Like, are you serious? And so I came back and I watched the match. And the match itself really wasn't that bad. But I'm really tired of the whole like fucking 12 curve stomps in a row. Like you said, like how are you going to get yourself out of that in the future? It'll be interesting to see, but with these people, it's probably not going to go well. But the biggest thing that took me out of it and made it feel even slower, the commentary is just so bad, especially on Raw. Dude, I watched like some clips from Raw recently in like the last few weeks. Like, I miss Michael Cole. Like, I never thought I would say that in my life, bro.
No, don't say that. That's...
No, I'm dead serious. And that's not good. It's, like, worse now. There's no... And the thing is, like, back in the day, there was so much flow. There was so much flow in commentary. Even AEW. Like, AEW, I'm not really a fan, but I can sit through their shows and be because the commentary is so good. Like, I can't, this commentary just takes you out of every, that match was like about 10 minutes too long, and it felt like it was at least fucking 50 minutes. And it only went, what, like 20 or so? Something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really hard to watch this programming now at this point. I mean, I still do because I like wrestling, and I like The Fiend. They're probably going to fuck it up somewhere down the road, but, you know, that commentary, though, just really killed everything. It's like, this could have been such a great... And then, right, normally when they have The Fiend doing, like, the thing where every time that a match ends and then they're playing his music and then it goes black and they play that creepy shit and he's standing there, like, that shit felt so lazy. It's like, why is this dude raising a... Like, he should be doing some creep... I don't know. Everything about it just seems really lazy. It's like, they have something so great. They have something that could be great with the right people, but everybody that seems to work there in creative just seems to be so lazy. It's crazy, especially, like, I said something to somebody else. It was like, you know, back in the late 90s and even the early 2000s, and I kind of fell off of watching wrestling around, like, 2007 up until, like, I started paying attention to it again back in, and paying attention, like, not watching weekly, just kind of trying to keep up with it back in, like, 2016. And I just feel like back then, yeah, they had cheaper effects and all of that, whatever, as far as, you know, but they did so much more with it. And now it's like they have all this stuff in the palm of their hands, but the people that are working there that have access to it have absolutely no idea what to do with it. And they've had good moments with him where, like, that SummerSlam, after he beat Balor and they had the camera zoom in on him, like, that was cool. But this just felt cheap. And then not even fucking a minute later, they're doing, like, an outro, like, thanks for watching Crown Jewel. It's like, I felt like I watched a really shitty game show. And that's not how you're supposed to feel after you watch a fucking wrestling show, you know what I'm saying? Anyway, that's all I got to say, so.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it. You make a good point in this respect. You just had a guy fall into a pit, and sparks flew, and flames shot out. You thought maybe he was dead. He rose from the dead. He won the championship. He's got this creepy mask. There's this creepy laughing going on in the background, and then you cut to Michael Cole, and he's like, good night, everybody, from Crown Jewel. Here, yeah. So that's a WWE issue. That's not isolated to tonight's show. It's not the fault of Michael Cole or anybody else. That's just WWE, the way they produce their shows. Some angles they really don't treat the way that they should. They should treat it like something really big just happened or really freaky and oh my God, and maybe just lay out and go off the air like that. But everything has to be all prim and proper. It's just a professional presentation. It's a television show. That's how they view themselves. It is a television show. And it does take you out of it sometimes. Let's go to, I believe, in Colorado, this person is calling from, area code 970.
Hey, Jason, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Oh, pretty good. Hey, I just have a quick thought and a question. A previous caller was asking, what's the Fiend's weakness? The only thing I could possibly think of is maybe the mask is what makes Bray the Fiend, and if the mask is removed, then he just becomes a normal Bray again.
Maybe it gives him like some kind of weird power of some kind.
Yeah, or maybe he's just like mentally ill and it's just an alter ego.
I think he's got some kind of mental illness going on. I think that goes without saying.
Yeah, and then my question is, a few months ago on the Firefly Funhouse, there was the 11:19 clock, and I was thinking, oh, maybe it's the Undertaker Survivor Series. And after what happened tonight or today and at Hell in a Cell, I can't see a normal superstar or whatever they call them, wrestlers, facing the Fiend and it being believable. You would think it has to be a legend or someone. So do you think his next opponent is the Undertaker at Survivor Series, or who could you see his next opponent being?
Oh, God. Now I hope not. I mean, that means the Undertaker would be fighting for the championship, which I think would be a terrible idea. What could The Undertaker do? We were just talking about this. I know The Undertaker also is the supernatural guy. Unless he's going to shoot lightning bolts out of his fingertips and electrocute him to death, What could The Undertaker at age 50,000 or whatever the hell he is now, what could he do? What could he do to put down Bray Wyatt? And that's a good point. I forgot about that 11-19 stuff from the Firefly Funhouse. You know, Bray has a lot of input into this stuff. So we may end up finding out along the way that it does mean something, but I don't know that we ever really found out what the meaning was behind that. If we did and I missed it, then, you know, shoot me a message in the chat and let me know. What the hell ever happened to that? And Survivor Series this year I know is not 11-19, so I don't think it's necessarily tied into the pay-per-view. But yeah, we never exactly got a resolution to what, or maybe there was no meaning behind it at all. Maybe he just put it there so that we would run in circles trying to figure out something that isn't there. Let's take a few more before we wrap up. Let's go to Atlanta, area code 678. You're on the air.
Hey, Solomon Monster.
Is this CJ?
Hello? Yes, it is.
How are you, sir?
I'm pretty good. Just got home from work. I got two quick questions.
Sure.
The first one, do you think there's any two people in WWE that could pull off a good best of seven series?
I think there's a lot of guys on the roster who could pull off a best of seven. I mean, you could take any number of guys who were on the show tonight. You could take Ali. You could take Gable. You could take, I mean, who else? Who else was on the show? Ricochet, McIntyre. Yeah, I mean, you got to have the right two people to do it. But absolutely, they got plenty of guys who could do that.
Awesome. My second question, because a lot of people have been talking about the ratings this month, how do you think the baseball playoffs took a lot of viewers away this last month?
I think they took some. I think it really hit NXT and AEW a lot harder, especially the World Series. I mean, God, 23 million people watched that baseball game last night. So AEW and NXT did record low audiences on TNT and USA. AEW still kicked their ass again, which I find interesting. I did not expect NXT when this little war started between these two, with, you know, head-to-head. I figured they would trade wins back and forth based on whatever might have been going on in a given night. But AEW has just whipped them every single week. So that is one of the great surprises to me in this head-to-head battle so far. But they were both down. AEW was down to, I read the numbers earlier. Let me, hold on a second. I'll give you the numbers. For those of you who tuned in late, we got ratings in for last night. And for AEW, 759,000, which is down from 960-ish, I think, the week before. NXT down to 580, down from, I think, 690. The week before. Game 7 of the World Series, 23 million. So those shows have been getting their asses kicked. SmackDown got its ass kicked. SmackDown did 888,000 views, or viewers, I should say, on FS1 on Friday night. Now, they were bumped to a totally different network. They were off-network television. They were bumped from Fox. They went to FS1. So they're going to rebound this week for sure, but that's an even bigger drop than I would have expected. 888,000. They couldn't even get a million people to tune in. And they've had baseball games in the last few weeks on FS1 that have done 10 million or however many million people. So you can't be like, well, FS1's not widely available. FS1 is widely available for people when they want to watch FS1. 888,000. That is the lowest SmackDown rating of all time. There has never been a SmackDown number as low in the 20 years of that show, going back to the pilot that aired on UPN. Remember UPN? There has never been a SmackDown show that has gotten a lower audience than that show last week. And that was because, you know, baseball took a good chunk out of them and bumped them from Fox. So when it comes to Raw and stuff like that, I don't get the sense it really impacted them as much. Let's go to I believe South Carolina, area code 803, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Solomon?
Good, how are you?
I got a question for you. You think Cain Velasquez made a mistake going to WWE and not going to AEW? Because it looks like they just buried him today. I mean, first match. How does he recover from that?
It's possible. He could recover. I don't think it was a mistake if he's in it for the money. Because he was never going to get the kind of money from AEW that he could get from WWE. He probably wasn't going to get that kind of money without working one of these Saudi Arabia shows. I wouldn't be surprised if he made $3 million or $5 million for this alone. Even if he made $1 million just for one match. That's not a bad night's work. So if it's all about the money, then I think he made the right decision. Would AEW have booked him stronger? Yeah, let's put it this way. I cannot envision a scenario where he would have gone to AEW and they would have had him lose in his first match. And they probably, what they would have done, they would have started the build for something with him and Jake Hager. Especially coming off that Bellator fight he just had last week. He need that poor bastard in the balls. First match in AEW would have made sense. Full gear, right? Cain Velasquez against Jake Hager. Watch out for the low blow. I doubt he would have lost in 2 minutes to Jack Swagger. And lastly here, let's go to... I want to go someplace we haven't been before. And we'll go back west. Let's go to San Jose, area code 408. You're on the air.
Hey, Solomon. How you doing, buddy?
Good. How are you?
Great. I have two things for you.
Great.
One, with the Bray Wyatt situation, do you think that Triple H was talking about a blockbuster trade announced later for... Who is it, Nikki Cross? Do you think they're going to cash that in and make him go to Raw after this?
Is it to have Nikki Cross go to Raw?
No, remember when while back on FSL backstage, they had Nikki Cross and Alexa.
Right.
And they said that they're going to have a blockbuster trade later. The trade, you think that'll be Bray Wyatt? That's going to be the trade later that they could cash in on?
Yeah, it's possible. Because I'll say this much, Alexa Bliss or Nikki Cross does not count as a blockbuster trade. So if they're holding off on some blockbuster trade, it doesn't get more blockbuster than your champion, WWE champion or Universal champion. So to me, that would make a lot of sense if that turned out to be the case. So we're going to wrap things up there. I want to thank everybody who has tuned in tonight. This has been fun. A rare Thursday afternoon stream after Sweet Saudi Money 4. I guess Sweet Saudi Money 5 will be coming up in April. And that would be... what show is that? That was the Greatest Royal Rumble. Was it last year? I believe it was last year. So what was the April show this year? Crown Jewel. I just forgot the name of the show. Hit me up in the chat. What's the other name of the other Saudi show that we had earlier this year? I don't even remember these names. I keep calling it Sweet Saudi Money, and that's I keep thinking that's the actual friggin' name. I think that's a much better name, by the way. But now I can't remember the actual name that they used earlier this year for the first one. But yeah, I guess that'll be the next one, and we've got two each year for the next, 8 years in this deal left after this year? 8 more years of this. 8 more years of Saudi Arabia shows. Fun. Fun times. I'm going to be back with you guys for episode 624. I believe this weekend is episode 624 of The Sound Off. That drops each and every Sunday on all the usual platforms. And AEW Full Gear pay-per-view is coming up, not this weekend, but next weekend. Of course, we've got one more Dynamite show first. And then Full Gear. And all month in the month of November, we are celebrating 12 years of the Solid Monster Sounds Off. This podcast 12-year anniversary is coming up in the month of November. So thank you, everybody, for sticking with me for 12 years. We have some people listening who have been here since day one. What do the Usos say? Besides, let me check my glove box. They usually say day one-ish, right? We have a lot of people listening to the show since day one who are listening to this right now. So I love each and every one of you guys. And that's it. I'm out of here. Happy Halloween. If you are going trick-or-treating, be safe. Watch for razor blades. Do they still do that? Do they still have some sick bastards out there who put razor blades in kids' candy? I think those people should be castrated. And on that fun note, take care, guys. I'll see you this Sunday for more Sound Off.